This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
So kind of how that happened, how I was kind of, I don't want to say seduced by it, but, charmed, incredibly charmed. And also just like the intellectual challenge of seeing this thing that's so different from how you've been told. And then, trying to figure out why do most Americans have no idea about it and how can you try to bridge that gap? And there's also a romantic subplot. I had a relationship with a Palestinian in a village called Jayus. And, through that relationship, I got to learn a lot about the culture and a lot about the occupation. Like, at one point, he tried to visit me in Ramallah, and it was difficult enough because of all the checkpoints. And then he was actually picked up by soldiers at one of the checkpoints and just disappeared like this. And this is a frequent thing that happens. So, it's one thing to read all the human rights violations reports, and it's one thing to, I was a journalist at the time, to report on these things happening, and then it happens to somebody that you care about. So it's a very different experience. So those kind of things, they're all woven throughout the book to explain both what, normal life is like and also what's done to that life through the occupation.
Yeah, one thing that really struck me as I opened the book, and being somebody who grew up knowing a lot about this issue, was just that you were on a backpacking trip. You didn't have any real intention of going into Palestine and Israel. And it seemed like either by accident or fate. And I don't know, how do you feel about it looking back now? I mean, you said square or round hole, round peg, square peg. And
Right.
But
yeah, so, I was backpacking from Cairo to Istanbul. And I was just going to do touristy things. Like, that was plenty adventurous for me at the time. I'm from Oklahoma. I studied physics. I really didn't know anything about the Middle East, except for what kind of, I dated a Lebanese guy, and I watched the news, and I read Lonely Planet, and I tried to triangulate what to expect. And, of course, it's all very different. Like, it's really, nothing prepares you for visiting the Middle East and how friendly it is and how welcoming and how beautiful and all these things that, you don't expect given the evening news. And then Palestine was like all of that super concentrated, like the nicest people I'd ever met anywhere, being brutalized more than I had ever imagined, a population could stand, and just witnessing all that. And then, within a week I knew almost everyone in the village, and I had so many friends, and they all had these funny stories, and like Israeli activists would come visit and foreign activists would come visit. And the whole thing was, Just really charming and really interesting to me. And I still am like addicted almost, you could say, to all the things that this place is. And yeah.
You do quite a nice job of intertwining your historical details and personal encounters throughout the book. The occupation of Palestine has had so many twists and turns since 1948. I'm sure it was a challenge to figure out what to include. Can you talk about your process of editing and inclusion?
Yeah, it was so difficult. I mean, the whole, timeline or arc of this conflict could fill a library, So how do you, within a book that is already mostly taken up with story, how do you give it enough context so that it's not just a free floating kind of bunch of stories? It actually, it gives you something to grasp onto and to think, this is how it kind of started and, whatever. And you don't want to just like have an introduction that's like, so here's a, short summary of the entire conflict. I don't like books that start like that. I like to start right in the action. And then kind of once I care about the characters and once I understand the setting, then you start throwing in all that backstory, little by little. So I had to kind of try to, one of the writers says, try not to have too many lumps in the oatmeal, try to stir them in so that, you don't even almost notice that you're being educated while you're being entertained. So it was a big challenge, and I tried to do the best I could.
I think you did a pretty good job.
Thank you.
A few tears shed on my end reading this. Mm. Well, I wanted to say, Pamela will be reading at the Hawthorne Powells, not at Downtown, tonight at 7:30, so excuse the error on my part. You worked for Dr. Barghouti, I don't know, I'm kind of summarizing this for people that don't that haven't read the book yet, although I know there's a lot of you out there that have and that can pick it up tonight. You worked for Dr. Barghouti, Palestinian presidential hopeful in 2005, who ended up with 20% of the popular vote in the last election. Mm. What did you learn from that experience?
It was a really fascinating experience. So I was the, you know, when he announced that he was going to be running for president, we were having a meeting at the office where I worked, and he said he needed somebody to volunteer to be his foreign press coordinator. And I was kind of like, I had my eye on the clock. I was going to go home and watch a movie, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden I look around, I realize I'm the only native English speaker who's not leaving for the holidays. So I was kind of the natural person to be the foreign press coordinator. And so at first I was like, oh God, I have to, you know, because it was going to be a lot of work in addition to this new job I just started, and of course not paid. So, but then I was like, wait a minute, my boss is running for president and I'm being offered a front row seat. Like, and so I'm like, okay, I can do it. And then I learned so much. It was really, really interesting.
I think we're going to cut it off there and we'll come back to that story after the break. Over to you, Carlos and Will.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be on the air with this terrific show. And it's great to be working here with Carlos Boom Boom Chavez. And we're trying to raise some money for this wonderful KBOO radio station. That's KBOO, the mighty 90.7, as my friend Justin Miller calls it. And you know what? To quote my friend Justin Miller, let's turn some pocket change into some social change. If you call us at 877-500-5266, that's 877-500-5266, you can turn your pocket change into some real social change. Yeah, just for a few cents a day, 5 or 6 cents a day, you can help sustain KBOO and keep us on the air. And that is a very reasonable price for such a terrific radio station.
Yeah, matter of fact, 16 cents a day will get you this wonderful book that you're hearing about, Fast Times in Palestine, A Love Affair with Homeless Homeland. Today's guest, Pamela and Olson, put together. This is one of the things that I really appreciate about KBOO is the programming that pertains to culture, you know, learning about culture from different perspectives. And in this case, you know, I mean, I think there's probably a fair amount of stuff out there on, you know, what's going on in Palestine, but this gives you kind of more of a ground level human perspective.
A personal perspective, if you will. And I got to tell you, I listen to a lot of different news sources. I'm a big news hound, and I love to, you know, learn what's going on in the world. And you really don't hear very much about what's going on in the Palestinian area or in the occupied homelands of the Palestinian people. And KBOO does bring you that information, and it brings it to you with some of the best spokesmen and spokespeople of those the Palestinian people. And you need to call us at 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266 to keep these really important voices on the air.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, this is why you tune into KBOO on a regular basis. This is the type of program that you want to hear about. You want to hear these personal stories. Because I feel in certain ways that you're able to connect to this. You know, these are stories that you can relate to in some way, shape, or form, and that's what draws you into this radio station on a regular basis. So once again, the phone number is 877-500-5266. I'll say it slowly because, you know, we want to make sure that you have enough time to actually write that down if this is the first time you're hearing it. 877-500-5266. And we'll go back to our programming.
Welcome back. I'm your host today, Sarah Farahat, with Between the Covers. We have here Pamela Olson, who just finished a book, Fast Times in Palestine, A Love Affair with a Homeless Homeland. And Pamela is going to be reading her book at the Hawthorne Powells tonight at 7:30. Welcome, Pamela.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carlos and Will. We're going to go back to the question that we were talking about before the break, which was about your time working for Palestinian presidential hopeful Dr. Barghouti in 2005. So when we left off, you had just decided to take this unpaid, insane kind of trip down
campaign lane.
Campaign lane, which, yeah. You know, for physics major, how did you go physics major to journalist to porn yeah. press coordinator, and what all did that entail once you decided to go down the rabbit hole?
Yeah, a friend of mine compared me to Forrest Gump. Like, I just kept being, like, in the right place at the right time and all these kind of historical moments. But yeah, so Dr. Mustaf Barghouti, which is different from Marwan Barghouti, who is a jailed Palestinian Fatah leader. There's a lot of Barghoutis. It kind of gets confusing. But Dr. Mustafa is a medical doctor who has a network of like medical relief societies, you know, healthcare clinics in the West Bank. And yeah, he also founded a political party to kind of fill the vacuum between Fatah and Hamas, because a lot of people are fed up with, like, the corruption of Fatah, and a lot of people, you know, don't have any interest in the ideology of Hamas. So, but there's really, it's kind of the only games in town. I mean, Americans can kind of relate, you know, we got Democrats and Republicans and a lot of people who were like, come on, you know, give us another choice. So, but, you know, third parties have troubles here, and you can imagine in the Middle East, they have troubles as well. But his party, you know, it's inclusive, democratic, nonviolent, you know, favors peace based on international law, secular, all these things that check the boxes of what you'd think the West would want in a Middle Eastern leader. But the problem was he didn't have funding from any foreign powers. He didn't have a militia. He didn't have any weapons. He didn't have kind of a system of patronage like Fatah has. So he was kind of left out in the cold in a way. And of course, you know, Fatah, they didn't want anybody upsetting their apple cart. And the Israelis, for their matter, you know, didn't want anyone upsetting the apple cart either. They kind of have things in hand. You know, they control the purse strings of Fatah and that kind of thing. So through the whole campaign, I watched both of these forces arrayed against Dr. Mustafa. You know, the Fatah people, they would use the state television only for Fatah programming or, you know, campaign materials. And, you know, the Israeli soldiers, they would prevent Dr. Mustafa from going to East Jerusalem. They'd prevent him from going to Gaza. They'd prevent him from going to the old city of Hebron. At one point, they dragged him out of his car and beat him to the ground, made him stay on the ground for more than an hour.
all this is included in your book.
Yeah, I tell all these stories in the book. And when that happened, when he was beaten, of course, we made a press release, sent it to all the world's press. And when I opened the New York Times the next day, it's like, oh, you know, elsewhere, Dr. Mustafa Barghouti claims he was involved in a scuffle with Israeli soldiers. And, you know, I called the journalist. I said, hey, you know, we sent you a press release. Why didn't you, you know, talk about what actually happened? And he's like, oh, we just didn't have time to go into that kind of detail. And I was thinking, like, okay, if an Israeli presidential candidate was beaten by Palestinians, I'm sure there would be, like, front page.
News,
yeah, exactly.
Right.
So the whole thing was fascinating to watch and to be right in the middle of.
And this was the last presidential campaign that has happened in the West Bank, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Throughout Palestine, which...
Right, yeah.
Can you explain a little bit about why that is?
Sure. So after that election, you know, Mahmoud Abbas won, obviously. And Dr. Mustafa, as you said, he got 20% of the vote, which is about as astonishing as if, you know, Ralph Nader or whatever that guy's, Ron Paul, if they got 20% of the popular vote, you know, it would be huge news. But this guy, this upstart with no, you know, foreign funding or whatever, he gets 20% of the vote and nobody in the U.S. knows about it. Nobody in Israel even knew about it. Few Palestinians even really knew about it. So that was really interesting. But so Abbas won. And then, you know, that was in early 2005. My book covers all of the year 2005 as Hamas is winning these local elections little by little. And the reasons for that was people were just, I mean, you know, Abbas would have a ceasefire and Israel would break it, and Abbas would refrain and Israel would break it again. And it would just keep going on like this. And then finally somebody would retaliate, and then the news would be like, oh my God, the Palestinians are breaking the ceasefire. And people are afraid, are sick of this. So, like, you know, they elected this moderate guy that everybody wanted them to elect and they got nothing. So they start, you know, turning slowly toward Hamas. And you watch that. I mean, I watched that happen even in Jayus, the village where I spent so much time. And, you know, then, of course, in January 2006, Hamas won the elections and the world didn't recognize this. They didn't want to talk to them. And, you know, I'm no fan of Hamas, but when you know, you don't get to choose somebody else's democracy. Like, you know, if somebody elects somebody, you got to deal with it. And they had been moderating and they had given up terrorism. and all these things in preparation for the elections. And God knows if they had been dealt with seriously, how much further they would have gone. But now we'll never know. And other things happened. There was like a mini civil war in Gaza, and the Hamas took over the Strip. And now the two sides are estranged, and so nobody knows what a presidential election even means, because there's like two different, you know, governing entities. Like Hamas basically still runs the West Bank, and Fatah runs the West Bank. Hamas is in Gaza. There's nowhere to have this election. I mean, you know, they're not even talking to each other. So it's a big mess.
There's not enough cohesion happening to make another presidential election move forward. Is that
right,
what you're saying?
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's by design. I think it's not an accident that, you know, mm-hmm. divide and conquer has been a tactic used throughout history. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, what kind of feedback have you gotten so far on your book?
You know, I keep waiting for some kind of pushback, but I think I protected myself pretty well in a couple ways. One is I don't make a polemical argument for a solution or for a tactic or for this or that. I just kind of, you know, explain what I saw and how things have come to this pass. And the only argument I make is kind of in favor of international law, which is not that, you know.
How radical.
Yeah, right. And then a lot of my citations are from Haaretz, an Israeli paper, or B'Tselem, or even the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So, you know, it says a lot of things that Palestinians say, but when Israelis say it too, then it's harder for people to argue, oh, you're just biased and whatever. So, so far it's been pretty muted as far as the pushback. So,
thank you. I think we're going to head over to Carlos and Will now for a little KBOO announcement.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, thank you very much. By dialing 877-500-5266, you can make your pledge of...
Now, hold on a second. What was that number again?
877-500-5266.
That's 877-500-KABU. If you call us up right now, you'll be helping support this terrific program we got on right now, and then you'll also be helping support all the other upcoming programs that are just unique perspectives on what's going on in the world and your community. So please call us at 877-500-5266. Now, we also want to thank all the people who've donated food over the entire course of this pledge drive, because their assistance has been invaluable. It's really important that you folks out there in the lovely land of listeners call up now and donate. I know you intend to, and I know you want to support KBOO because you enjoy listening to it, and so now is your opportunity. Just $5 a month would be a $60 pledge in a year, and we have some t-shirts available that way. And when you become a member, you become part of this community. You get to vote in the KBOO elections. You get a KBOO card that gives you discounts all over town. I mean,
get to hang with Will.
Yeah, you get to hang out with me occasionally, if you're lucky, or you get to hang out with Carlos Boom Boom Chavez, a fun time boy if ever I met one. But there's lots of things going on at KBOO, and lots of great volunteers, and people who are doing this because they love KBOO and they love their community. And you can express your love by calling us at 877-500-5266.
Yeah, you can also go online at kboo.fm. For those listeners that stream the program, whether you know you're at work or you're in a different area that the signal doesn't reach, you know, our streaming will reach you wherever you're at, as long as you're able to log in. And at that same website, you're able to become a active member of KBOO, of this KBOO community, and put your money to work as well. You know, whether it's small pocket change or whether you have a larger donation, you know, everything is welcome, and everything is going to go a very long ways. KBOO does a really good job of extending, you know, any of the membership dollars out as much as we can, so that we can do the most with the money that we get.
That's for sure. You really do get incredible value for money if you donate to this organization, because I mean, everybody here works so hard on their shows. It's really, I recommend coming down to 20 Southeast 8th and meeting some of the people who put these shows on and meeting some of the people who make KBOO happen for you, the listener. But another thing you can do, if you don't have the time to drop in, then please call us at 877-500-5266. It is so important, because Portland is a great town, and it is a town that's based on community. Yeah. So if you call up now, you'll be joining the KBOO community. And I have all these noisy people right behind me who can't wait to answer the phone and take your money and put it to work. Put it to work here.
Well, and just to remind you, Pamela Olson's wonderful book, Fast Times in Palestine, A Love Affair with a Homeless Homeland, is available at a $60 minimum pledge. That's nothing. That's 16 cents a day. That's $1.12 a week.
That really isn't that much, is it?
No. And you can get things set up. You can get things set up in a way that you can basically get an auto deduction set up. It's safe. It's secure.
It's very convenient.
It's easy. Yeah. And the one thing that I should mention is that anything that you donate is 100% tax deductible, so you get it all back at the end of the year. So you're making,
how can you lose? You can't lose that way.
You're making an investment, but you're also getting the money back at the end of the year. So you're actively becoming involved. You step across that line where you become an active member. Your dollars are going a long way, and then at the end of the year you get that money back, and then you can put it right back into KBOO, become a renewing member, like many people have.
It makes sense, and it makes dollars, and we need those cents and dollars to keep this wonderful radio station going.
Well, and just to say one more thing about the book that we've been hearing about on this program, Pamela Olson will give you you'll get an autographed copy of
an
this
book. An autographed
copy,
yeah, did you say?
That's right.
Great gosh almighty.
So she's going to autograph.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Yeah, well, it is. So she'll autograph those books for you to get. And once again, at a minimum pledge of $60 a year, you can get that book and get a lot more of the information. I mean, there's the thing about a lot of these programs is that we're sometimes squeezing a lot of information into a half hour, an hour long program, and you're left, wanting to hear more about what's going on. And that's how I'm feeling with this program today.
I couldn't agree more. That's exactly how I feel. You always want to know what else is there to find out with all these guests and the people that come on, and particularly in the case of this, about a personal story of the Palestinian people.
Yeah, so once again, the number is 877-500-5266.
And we're back. My name's Sarah Farahad. I'm here on Between the Covers with author Pamela Olson. Fast Times in Palestine was recently named in Publisher Weekly as one of the top 10 travel books of 2013. Fast Times is the story of a young college graduate who finds herself unwittingly thrown into the realities of life in the occupied territories, literally sort of hosted into into your time there. We were talking about feedback you've been getting about the book, and so I think that is one of the more positive things that people have awarded you for that book. Is there anything else you wanted to add to that?
Sure, yeah. You know, I mentioned, I just talked about the lack of blowback, but in fact, there's also been a lot of positive, responses to the book, thankfully. Publishers Weekly, when my publicist forwarded me that information, I was like jumping around my computer, like, yes. Because I really want to reach more mainstream Americans with this story that's not told very much in America anywhere. So that I hope that's an avenue for reaching more people. And then, Kirkus Reviews gave me a great review.
So what's your favorite, if you had one story out of here that was just like, you were just, it jazzed you to continue writing and excited you about sharing it with the readers here, what would it be?
Gosh, there's so many great stories. I love the olive harvest. There's a really sweet romance, as I mentioned, with Kais. There's a whole arc of that story that I think we're both glad we were able to memorialize that in this book. And then when my parents came for a visit in chapter 10, my mother had never been out of the United States before. So she was just like everything was just new, and just watching her experiences of everything. And even, for example, the checkpoints, like if after you've been there for a year, the checkpoints become this kind of normal thing, but it's not a normal thing. It's like a horrible thing. The way people are like funneled into these cattle chutes and harassed and sometimes taken away and sometimes turned back. And she's seeing all this happening and she's like, oh my God, how is this happening over here? Nobody in America even knows or cares. And I'm like, well, that's a very good question, Mom, but then she also, she visited Ramallah, the town where I was living, and everywhere we go, people are like, oh, you're Pamela's parents, and then giving us free stuff. And it was, you know, they're so fun. And then we tried to go to the Dead Sea. We were stopped at another checkpoint. We weren't allowed to go. So into Bethlehem instead. And like, I don't know, my mother, she was just so charmed by everything and so horrified. It was kind of like watching myself, you know, experience mm-hmm. everything for the first time all over mm-hmm. again. So that was a really fun mm-hmm. time.
So a lot has changed for Palestine since you finished the book. The horrors of Operation Cast Lead, a rise of mass hunger strikes by Palestinians in Israeli prisons, continued settlement expansion, and the steady annexation of East Jerusalem. But for the first time, Palestinian filmmaker Ahmed Bounat has been nominated for an Oscar for Five Broken Cameras, and there's rising support for boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement here in the U.S. and abroad. Both, what do you make of Obama's visit, but also, do you have plans to go back? You know, what do you miss? Any of those things that you want to jump into before we close out here?
Sure. Every spring, I miss Palestine because it gets so blindingly green and so gorgeous, and like the almond so trees pretty. Are blossoming. And every fall, I get nostalgic because it's the olive harvest, and I want to be harvesting olives again. And you know, I've been able to go back about every couple of years, and I hope to continue to do that. But as for Obama's visit, it was, you know, a lot of words. Unfortunately, he's not done much, actually. And he even said, you know, look, we're not really leaders. You have to push us to do things. And which, you know, it's kind of a total cop out. Like, if you're going to be a leader, be a leader. But
strange to say for a Nobel Peace Prize winner.
Yeah, there you go. I wasn't that overwhelmed by the visit. But, you know, all these things you're talking about, the hunger strikes and the Palestinian film and the BDS movement gaining steam. I don't know, you know, it's kind of like the immovable object and the unstoppable force. Like, nobody knows what's going to happen in the next few years. But I hope that my book will at least help begin with a baseline of honesty about what's going on, which is otherwise pretty much missing in the U.S. Everything is kind of, the Palestinian perspective is very much, you know, whited out of the narrative. So mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Pamela Olson, with her book Fast Times in Palestine, A Love Affair with a Homeless Homeland. You can get an autographed copy here on KBOO for a $60 membership, or she'll be at Hawthorne Powell's tonight at 7:30. Thanks so much, Pamela.
My pleasure. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio Night for the 2013 Blazers season will be April 17th, the last home game of the regular season.
Tickets are limited for this unique opportunity where a portion of the proceeds will help support your community radio station.
More information can be found at kboo.fm/Blazers.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub. Independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizza, salads, and wraps. Located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com.
And this program is also made possible by Merrill Hurst University's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all forms affect not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. You'll learn the power of media and how you can use that power to become a participant in change. Now accepting applications. Details at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO.
Hello and welcome to a special membership drive edition of The Film Show on KBOO. I'm Jen Chavez.
And I'm S.W. Koster. Today we'll be introducing you to some local filmmakers who are using their art to affect social change. In a few minutes I'll be talking with Gigi Williams. She's a former bank executive who left her position as a loan officer to produce the documentary Occupy, We the People, which will be screening next week at the Bob White Theater in Portland.
But first, I'm joined in the studio by two guests from the Northwest Film Center to discuss their ongoing program, Project Viewfinder. The Film Center is partnering with several local social service providers to mentor 12 young Portlanders transitioning from homelessness to self-sufficiency, by teaching them filmmaking and media production skills. Their short works will premiere at the Film Center on Wednesday, May 1st. I'd like to warmly welcome the Film Center's Education Marketing Officer, Aaron Schwartzbord, and Project Viewfinder student, Antoine Thomas, to the film show.
Hi.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us today, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us.
So, Aaron, I'd first just like to ask about how the program came to be. Can you tell me about the influence of former Northwest Film Center student Hazel Malone?
Absolutely. Well, we've been doing a lot of work with underserved populations throughout our history, and I want to say 10 to 13 years ago, we did a project with New Avenues for Youth. Hazel Malone was currently participating in their programs and started working on this project, creating a film. She really took to to filmmaking and to the project and started hanging around at the Film Center, going on to have an internship with us, and we scholarshiped her into a bunch of classes. She eventually went on to work at Leica on Coraline. She's really interested in animation and claymation. And when we started planning our 40th anniversary celebration last year, we wanted to highlight some different students and some of the just work we had done over the years, and we created about a 5-minute piece about Hazel and her journey with film and how the Film Center influenced her. So once that aired at our 40th anniversary celebration last spring, we saw the impact that it had just on that room of people, and we realized that we needed to continue this type of work further.
And you mentioned New Avenues for Youth, and I understand that that's one of the partnering social service providers. How are they